from KQED Public Radio in San Francisco and live from San Jose's downtown College Prep High School, I'm Michael Krasny. In the next hour of Forum, we'll continue our focus on first-generation college students and what enables them to get through college and university four-year educations. Not all these students are poor, but many are, and only 6% of low-income students go on to earn a baccalaureate degree as compared to some 40% of higher-income students. And there are many other challenges facing the so-called first-generation college students. We'll explore what many of those are, and we'll discuss how they can be overcome, or at least challenged. That's next on Forum after this. KQED Public Radio in San Francisco and live from San Jose's downtown College Prep High School with an audience. Yeah. I'm Michael Krasny and welcome to this remote broadcast. And in this hour, we're going to continue to talk about first-generation families and students going to college from those first-generation families that have not had college education. Studies now show that more first-generation students, the sons and daughters of parents who had no college education, are pouring into community colleges and universities than ever before. And the ever-growing Hispanic population in the state of California accounts for a good deal of these higher numbers. While making substantial increases in college enrollments, Hispanic and African-American students are also dropping out at higher rates. And so in this hour, we want to talk about what keeps those young people in colleges and universities right up to and including their baccalaureate degrees. With us is Jennifer Andaluz, who is co-founder and executive director of Downtown College Prep. Welcome.
Thank you.
And also with us this morning is Armando Cervantes, who is Downtown College Prep alumnus class of 2004, now working at a nonprofit called Sunday Friends and tutoring elementary school students in English and math.
Good morning.
Welcome. Good morning to you. Jeff Davis is also with us this hour. He's the director of the Learning Center and an adjunct professor of English at Sonoma State. The Learning Center is a student support project which helps first-generation students, and he's also the author of The First-Generation Student Experience, Who They Are, Their Characteristics and Strategies for Improving Their Persistence and Success. Welcome, Jeff Davis.
Thank you.
And Sharifa Wilson is also with us this hour, site director for College Track in East Palo Alto, a first-generation student herself, and welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Glad to have you all here, and thank you again for your hospitality, Jennifer Andaluz. Let's talk about maybe again how you create this different culture here, particularly where the first-generation students are concerned, so that you can get them on the college track, the kinds of things that we heard from Michael D'Souza that you might want to add to or embellish even.
Well, I think what really differentiates our mission and our school is that we're truly committed to kids thriving in college. And so we don't just get them through the A through G's and get them with a college acceptance letter. We actually ensure that they enroll, and we coach them through the freshman transition and through the second year of college and the fourth year of college and the sixth year of college.
Yeah, we heard they keep coming back.
Absolutely. We have resources dedicated to really coach the students and families through the process because, as we know, the colleges haven't truly made it their priority, and their resources are very limited to support first-generation kids. And so we see it as our responsibility, and we put our resources and our energies to that.
So how many of you students out there feel that you'll be coming back here once you've got on the college track? You may be off at some university, who knows where, you know, New Zealand or something, but you want to come back here? Is that true for many of you? You're nodding, a lot of nodding heads around.
So, you know, here, Michael, if I could say one thing, our kids say they'll never come back, but they always come back.
Yeah, a lot of parents have said that, too, I think, in many instances. But you put a lot of emphasis here in terms of preparing them for college and then helping them shepherd them through and so forth on believing in them. And I think that's an important thing that has to be emphasized.
It's the most fundamental thing. We have every technical resource available to us in this society. What we don't have is the true will to ensure that first-generation kids, and specifically those coming from underserved communities, really have the resources and the faith in themselves and the self-efficacy to see themselves as college students. And we can make all kinds of claims about there's good jobs out there for air conditioning repair people and for mechanics and so forth and so on. But if you've been a first-generation college graduate in your family, you know the family importance of that. You know the historical significance in your veins, in your blood, about what that means. And DCP is fundamentally committed to having thousands of kids in San Jose change the footprint in their families and in their neighborhoods. And we truly believe by doing that, we're going to create a society that lives up to its democratic ideals and add to the economic vibrancy of our community.
Well, that inspires a great deal in terms of making one's family proud and doing something that the family has never done before and getting that college sheepskin and all that. But what about the kids themselves? You said you want to make them see themselves as college students. How does one enhance that? How does one motivate that?
I'll tell you a quick story. We have a senior right now who is struggling to fulfill his mathematics requirements, and specifically it's with geometry. And I have watched him work with two tutors every Tuesday and Thursday after school for 2 hours. I've watched his geometry teacher prepare mini lessons and reteaching moments for him. And the other day I had the great pleasure of watching three of him, the student and two of his friends, after he got his geometry test where he got an 84%, which allowed him to pass the first semester course. And it was such a great gesture. The kids were sort of shucking and jiving with him and pushing him on the shoulder and saying, hey, you know what, we knew you could do it all along. And he knew he could do it. And he persisted from having taken that test two and three times. And he's still a senior, persisting through failure and perceptions of his own failure. And we know that we have to surround him with that sense of faith and that sense of if you work hard enough and you truly dedicate yourself, you can achieve it. And I know that he wants to be a fireman. And when he talks about being a fireman, he says, I'm going to be a college-educated fireman because you know what? I'm going to be captain someday. And that's what you need to be a captain.
Okay, Jennifer Andaluz is co-founder and executive director of Downtown College Prep, which is where we are today. And Armando Cervantes is with us. He's a DCP alumnus of the class of 2004. They put a lot of pressure on you, too, though, don't they? I mean, do those applications and the kinds of things we were hearing about?
Yeah, definitely. It's a lot of pressure. Everyone here wants you to go. It's sort of like a big family, so everyone here is behind you, encouraging you to go, wanting you to go. They want to see you succeed.
Talk about your success, though. Freshman year was tough for you, wasn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I say freshman year was my toughest year. I really didn't know. I still didn't know if I was if college was the right track for me. I was kind of a limbo, sort of like when you go to the fridge, you open it up, you know you want something, but you don't really know what it is. So I was there.
Please hope there's food in there.
I was there. I knew I wanted to be there, but I wasn't quite sure what direction I wanted to take it. So I kind of tested the waters, got a feel of what each different department had to offer, and that's when I fell in love with advertising.
What about, you know, the adjustment of, we were talking before in the first hour about a homogenous population here. Suddenly you got to make new friends, and they don't necessarily look the same background as you ethnically and all that. That's challenging, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely challenging. And I think DCP sort of mentally prepared me for that. They told me it's not going to be here. No one's going to be holding your hand as much as we do here. So I sort of expected that. So I felt like I went in there with the right mindset. So even though it was challenging, it wasn't overwhelming.
So what motivated you? What motivated you through your first year particularly?
All the support I had behind me. I mean, I had my family behind me as well as the entire DCP staff and students.
And you would say what to some of these students as far as the best piece of wisdom you can offer about succeeding on the college level?
Open up. Definitely open up. Just you being here at DCP, you're on the right track. Open up and you'll be on the right train. So you might be on the right track, but you might be on the wrong train.
Wrong well, there's that train metaphor again.
Yeah,
we can't seem to escape it. We can't get off that track here. But you also, I think, would like to emphasize probably, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but when you say open up, don't be afraid.
Definitely. It could be very intimidating, especially if you're the first in your family. You have a lot of pressure going into it, but yeah, don't be afraid. Definitely.
But you get a lot of strokes, too, don't you?
Yeah.
Thank you, Armando. Jeff Davis is also with us, and he directs Learning Center at Sonoma State and has written a book about first-generation student experience called Who They Are, Their Characteristics and Strategies for Improving Their Persistence and Success. We ought to say, first of all, we're not only talking about poor kids here. We're talking about a whole gamut of mainly the poorest quadrile. But we're talking about a pretty wide gamut, aren't we?
Right. You know, first-generation students
have for a long time in the post-secondary environment been conflated with low-income students, and that their concerns and their difficulties are actually the same. And if you go to a lot of post-secondary institutions and you go to the counseling center, you go to the advising center, unfortunately, the advising and counseling is, in fact, the kind of counseling and advising that has been given to low-income students for a long, long time, and not necessarily tailored to first-generation students' concerns. And that's one of the things I do in my book, is try to differentiate these concerns one from the other.
The big concern here is growing up in a household without college history or without necessarily any kind of background vis-a-vis colleges.
Right. And you might find it interesting to know that the definition of a first-generation student hasn't even been unified yet in the scholarly community. Some people want to describe a first-generation student as parents who have some college, parents who have no college, and as Michael points out, it's not at all about how many units that a parent has earned. It is about growing up in a household that privileges the college experience, that talks about it, that demonstrates some of the skills that are necessary for success in college in a variety of ways. And these things are not necessarily directly communicated to students, such as, here's how you study for an exam, but over time with parents and family and this constant reminder that college is even a stage in an adult's development into becoming an adult, makes a very big difference. This is one of the big things, I think, that makes it difficult for first-generation students when they arrive at a four-year institution. They are, in fact, competing with students who have this benefit.
They also need often remedial classes. They need tutoring, right?
That's true. First-generation students are more likely to be in remedial classes. They are more likely to migrate out of the sciences. They are more likely to have a college experience that has been partially determined by perhaps not taking rigorous courses in high school. And I want to go back to the family, and it's been mentioned, Michael Kirst was mentioning how a lot of change has to go all the way to middle school, and as he was mentioning, some patterns in high school class taking actually begin in middle schools, especially mathematics. And parents of first generation students are not sophisticated about the public school systems, generally speaking. They're not as good as advocating for their children, who end up in perhaps a track that is not the college preparedness track. So it's all these things, and they're fairly subtle in their nature.
Also competing against students who have AP classes. I mean, there are those kind of differences as well, and many of them need to work or to find financial aid, whether they come from that lower income group or not. I'm also struck by the fact that we haven't even necessarily come to define first generation students as a category. It's still kind of an emerging, as you said, lexicon idea, but you're talking mainly about parents without a four-year education.
Correct.
And something that goes back historically, really, to the GI Bill. I mean, in terms of this proliferation that we've seen. Just talk about that for a moment, because it changed everything historically, really.
Absolutely. And since the GI Bill and since the the social upheaval of the 60s, college availability has changed dramatically. I mean, it's not so long ago that very few first-generation students ever went to college. It's generally the children of parents who went to college, or it was, and this is a big change. Just to switch gears just a little bit, because we're here at this very wonderful institution, and you can just feel the enthusiasm, and you can feel the success that just ripples through this place. But unfortunately, The stats for the success of first-generation students at the post-secondary level are not good. In fact, they're very bad. A 2005 National Center for Education Statistics report placed the graduation rate for non-first-generation students, and they measured it over an 8-year period. The more standard measure is 6-year period, but the graduation rate for non-first-generation students was 68%. The graduation rate for first-generation students, half that, 34%. Now, this is a startling statistic and not a good one.
It's a demoralizing statistic. In fact, I want to veer away from the statistic and bring Sharifa Wilson in this because she's a success story. I mean, first-generation student herself and now a site director at College Track in East Palo Alto. Talk about what kept you in college.
Well, I had a strong support system around me once I got to college. I was fortunate, and even though my parents didn't go to college, they understood the value of going to college, and so they gave me continuous support and encouragement. And when I landed at in NYU, I went into an opportunities program where I was surrounded by staff and other students who were very encouraging and supportive all the way through the first year process.
So if you can find that supportive community, you're really a notch up immediately, you would say.
Yeah, and that's actually what we do at College Track. College Track is an after-school program that works with students who want to go to four-year schools, and we literally surround them with support. When I was listening to some of the previous comments, and they were talking about some of the issues of high school, falling into the wrong crowd, being swayed by gangs. What we do is that we create an environment at College Track where we create a positive peer environment. So not only do we provide academic support for them, but we also do personal development. So we do things like this Friday, a group of the students are going ice skating together. Last night, they went to a play together. Last week, we took students to Disney on Ice together. And a lot of the students and the parents are comfortable with that because they know that their students are hanging around with kids that are all going in the same direction, all heading to college. And that's really needed to support first-generation students.
More of a sense of safety again, too, isn't
mm-hmm.
it? Plus the connectedness and the feeling that you're doing something rather than hanging around or loitering or getting in trouble, whatever.
Exactly.
And talk a bit, if you would, about the kind of partnerships you do with schools, because there's a lot of that in terms of what you provide.
Yeah, so what we do is that we go in, we have partner high schools that we work closely with to support the students. And we go in and we work with the principals and the teachers to understand that this is a partnership. The focus is on the student, and we all want the best for the student. Sometimes we're challenged by counselors having lower standards, lower expectations, particularly of students that come from our types of communities. And so we go in and we play the role of advocate for them. Fortunately, we've been around 13 years, so we have a history of success.
You're reaching critical mass.
Yes. So when I go into the schools now, I provide the school with a list of the students who graduated from their school who are College Track students, and I identify what colleges they're in so that they can understand that it is a reality for them.
Getting back to what enables students to do better or to succeed more once they are in college, again, we talked about the isolation that some of these first-generation students feel, not only because they come from a different ethnic background, but often because they don't know anybody or they don't have mm-hmm. the similar kind of connections that can be made on a college campus. In your own case, it helped to have professors, for example, who are of the same ethnic background as you. It helped to find peers who are of the same ethnic background. This is something that may be an important message to tell students.
Yes, that's true. And again, the way that we do it at College Track is that when we send a student to a school, we link them up with one of our alumni that's already there. Our first students were the pioneers.
Kind of a mentoring program?
Yeah. Sort of a mentoring program, right. I had a freshman who went up to Chico State, and she was just too overwhelmed by the environment. Well, we had a junior there. So what we did was that we linked her up with him. He met with her on a weekly basis to help shepherd her through and monitor her and give her that support she needed to get through.
Well, let me actually ask some students out in our audience here to talk about what you can say specifically about what college means to you, about the challenges that you're concerned about. We'll just raise your hand and we'll go to you with a microphone. I'd like to maybe get some students involved in this, and don't be shy. You know, you're obviously among friends here and you don't have to be inhibited. We'll come to you. Again, the question is simply, why? What college means to you? You've heard a lot of things from adults here, but maybe some of you would like to chime in and give your own reasons. Maybe they're similar to what you've been hearing, family pride, your own sense of self-esteem, the kinds of things that have been mentioned. But what you're concerned about also, maybe what you're a little apprehensive about. Just feel free to raise your hand here, and we'll go to you.
Hello. Oh. Yeah. Hello. My name is Eduardo.
Hi, Yanez, Eduardo.
A senior here in DCP. What basically it means to me is just knowing that I shattered that pattern, as Mr. D'Souza said previously, and knowing that in a way I sort of proved something I heard 4 years ago wrong, that like we were here in the same room in assembly, and I heard that our freshman population was 400 students. No, I mean 200 students, freshman population. Half of us were not going to continue on in this path. I am glad to say I'm not one of those half.
Yeah, that's a nice statistic to be part of, isn't it? To be not part of that half. Jeff Davis, you're going to say something?
Yeah, and listening to this young man here.
Thank you, Eduardo.
I'm reminded of one element that is shown in the scholarly literature, and that is that first-generation families many times have the entrance into college in their family mythology as almost the end of the process. And non-first-generation families regard entry into the four-year institution as the beginning, right? And you begin and you end with the college degree, and so that is something that can be a difficulty, in that first-generation students begin their college career almost thinking that they already have done everything they can do, and I'm sure this young man plans on being a big success in college too, and keep that in mind as well, that you got to finish. You don't want to be one of those 34%. You don't want to be one of those 66% that don't end up with a four-year degree.
Yeah, and as long as we're giving out statistics here, after talking to Sharifa, I just looked down at a note I had made from some research that I'd done. Students of black or Hispanic background have a 50% chance overall of finishing with a diploma in high school. A Native American youth, it's 30%. And when you look at Asian Americans or white Americans, it's upwards of 75, 76, 77%. And that's very revealing, again, about the necessity of finding peer groups. There's a lot that's made out of the fact that kids go to college and maybe they associate too much with their own peer groups, but it's also very valuable to do that and to spread out and to obviously have cross-cultural influences as well. If you'd like to join us, we welcome your phone calls. In fact, I'd like to hear also students, again, I'll put out the challenge to you. You might think about this when we come back. Reasons why you're going to college and what it means to you and what you're concerned about. Maybe some anxieties that you might want to talk about freely and openly, I hope. Toll-free number for those of you listening to us out there in Radioland is 866-733-6786. We welcome your comments or questions. Again, you can join us live at that number, 866-733-6786, or you can simply post a comment or a question online by going to kqed.org/forum and going to this segment. You're listening to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We are here at Downtown Prep, and we have an audience with us, in fact. Canton College Prep is located in San Jose. It's a high school. It's a charter school. It's the first charter school, in fact, in Silicon Valley. And Jennifer Andaluz is the co-founder and executive director. She's here with us. So is Armando Cervantes, who is a graduate of class of 2004, now working at a nonprofit called Sunday Friends and tutoring elementary school students in English and math. And Sharifa Wilson, a site director for College Track in East Palo Alto, a first-generation student herself. And that's, of course, been our focus here largely this morning. Jeff Davis, in fact, has written the book on first-generation students. It's called The First Generation Student Experience. He's also an English professor at Sonoma State and directs the Learning Center there, adjunct professor of English. And we're going to go to our callers and also go to those of you in the audience. I should mention again that if you have some thoughts or questions or comments in the audience, just raise your hand and we'll go to you. And I'd particularly like to hear from some of the students about what going to college means to them and what they are concerned about. But while we were in the break, Jennifer Andaluz was talking to me about needles and haystacks. So let me we're moving away from the train metaphor now to a different one.
One of the things that we've always emphasized is this idea that it's not about finding the best and the brightest and the most capable kids. That would be the needle. It's really about identifying all of the ways that we need to be dealing with the haystack, and that's all of the thousands of our kids. And I think that one of the fears that I have around the first generation college dialogue and even some of the programs that I'm seeing developed at the college level is that it's really about those bright kids and those kids who, you know, are destined to become, you know, the next senator. And I'm very interested in talking about the ways that we as a system, as a K-16 system, begin to address the thousands of kids who truly can be successful in our CSUs and UCs without the need for these really high leverage programs that are really only serving a few kids at any particular university or even a nonprofit organization.
You've said we need more counselors and need more coaches. I think that's pretty evident, and it came up in the last hour. Also, we clearly need more jobs in the economy that these young people are going to be training for and fulfilling. Also, you have said that we need more accountability in the colleges and universities. What do you mean?
I can own the college's frustration about kids having to take remedial courses, and certainly that's something that we're looking really closely at. How are our kids performing on the EPT and ELM and ensuring that they're ready to take and pass those courses so they can test into English 1A? That said, when I send my kid off to the community college or the CSU, I want to really ensure that they're getting the kind of cohort that Sharifa talks about, that they're getting college professors who understand their academic history, that they're not ending up in not just lecture halls of 600, but these vast community halls where nobody truly knows how special it is for them to be there. I was working with some folks at San Jose State, and their EOP program is seriously underfunded. They have 5,000 EOP kids and 1.5 counselors working with those kids.
EOP is Ethnic Opportunity Program, yeah.
And we need to now, as colleges and universities and as K-12 organizations, even in this climate where we're absolutely underfunded, to say that that's not acceptable, that we're seeking to change patterns, and by doing it at that ratio, that we're doing a true disservice to the programs that we're building and the kids who are coming in. So I think colleges really need to own their attrition.
Again, Jennifer Andaluz is co-founder and executive director of Downtown College Prep. We have someone in the audience, and you give us your first name, if you would.
Hi, I'm Krista. I'm a psychology instructor at Skyline College in San Bruno, and I found that a common misconception among my students is that it is an inborn trait being a good student. And when a student does well in the class, sometimes I'll teach a smaller class, and they'll say, oh, you're so lucky that you know this stuff, and you have a great memory, and you were born that way. And I stop them, and I say, tell me how you prepared for this class. And she'll say, well, I read the book, I highlighted it, I took notes, I worked everything in the study guide, then I went online and I did every single demonstration available to me. And it's kind of part of what I'm hearing a lot of, which is this unconditional positive regard and encouragement for the students, is to say, this is a skill. You are not born with this. And I was a great student. My parents were great students. And my children are great students because we have been able to teach that to each other. And so I'm glad that Jeff is here, because it is the job of our schools to provide study skills education for those students, because they can all succeed once they understand it's a skill to be learned, like soccer or any other skill.
Good point. Armando, can you relate to that in terms of your own experience, or Sharifa, just having to learn study skills, having to learn how to study in ways that would best suit you and best serve you?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like I said, I didn't know anything about studying. It definitely is a skill. I came in here. They sort of walked us through how to keep notes, making sure we highlight everything, making sure we're writing on the side of the books, taking notes. And it's, like the audience member said, it's definitely a skill that you need to learn, and it's a skill anybody can learn.
And it does involve, as you indicated, a lot of memorization. Sharifa, you want to add?
Yeah, I was going to say that actually is one of the things that we're able to do at College Track, is that we equip the students with the skills that they need to survive when they get to college. So note-taking, putting them in study groups, encouraging them to reach out for resources that are on the campus as well.
Another question from the audience.
Good morning. My name is Carlos, and I'm a first-generation college graduate. I just finished at Santa Clara University last June.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And in answering your question from a little while ago in terms of what college means to you, having graduated now, I think that we hear a lot about our Latino and Hispanic communities being a fast-growing minority group. But unfortunately, sometimes we still have that misperception that we are the ones, we are a fast-growing group. However, a lot of our parents come here, whether it be picking fruit, working in the labor workforce and all that. So I think going to college and graduating from college is, in a sense, shifting the way our community is viewed by others. So it means changing those statistics. And we have to work hard to be viewed as professionals and educated rather than just people that come and do those type of works.
Do you feel that you're kind of a representative of your community? You're saying now, I'm a college graduate and I can do it not only to your own people but to everybody else who's out there.
Yeah, definitely. I also currently I work with a nonprofit organization, and we have a social network site.
Might as well plug it.
I work for a social network site for first-generation college students. I have my business card here, zooms.net. And, yeah, definitely, like I said, going out there, being a professional, just shifting from that paradigm of being a mechanic, of being a construction worker. And so I think it's not only a sense of pride for oneself, but also a sense of pride for making your parents proud, making your community proud. And it's a way of thanking your community, your support group, for believing in yourself, even when sometimes you didn't believe in yourself.
Thank you for that, Carlos. We have someone else in the audience now.
Yeah. In addition to something I didn't get to say about in terms of
that's Pedro Medina, who was with us on our first hour panel.
With that percentage of minorities going into college, is that in order for more teenagers to go to a four-year university, they at least need to know more about college and what it is, to go to college. There are several schools in San Jose, and these are public schools, which do not inform high schoolers about the importance of going to college. So now how do we expect to see more Latino, Black, or other minorities to increase on going to college if they are not getting the help, or they're just not being informed about college? The schools like DCP set the example and prepare these students to go to a four-year university, and about 90% of the students here are Latino, and yes, we're going to college.
Yeah, how much do you set an example, Jennifer? Jennifer Onalu is smiling and feeling some pride herself here, but do Southern California schools, for example, which have high Hispanic populations, have they tried to model themselves after DCP? Or?
Well, actually, I was just in a conversation with Jeff this morning, and he's working at a partner high school up in Sonoma that came to us, charter school, that came to us several years ago trying to build their charter school based on our model. And one of the things that we talked about in the earlier hour is whether charters are scalable, or how can we do this in the context of large, urban, comprehensive high schools. What we've established here is a proof point that you can take kids who fundamentally were not on the college track and give them the sense of self-efficacy and the skills and change the mindset of their families to prepare them to be successful. And we've removed excuses. And so it's now time for K-16 to start making sure that every school, like Pedro was saying, is making sure that its lowest performing kids, right? It's middle performing kids, it's Haystack kids are preparing for college success. And what's going to be great is, you know, we'll have over 400 kids in San Jose in the college pipeline and have graduated from college. And that's in 6 years. So now take that 6 years and take it, you know, into 18 years and take it into, you know, the next 25 years. And we're talking about thousands of kids here in San Jose. And that is going to change neighborhoods.
It's going to change the arteries and veins of American economy as
well. You know, absolutely. I mean, one of the things that's very interesting to me is I'm constantly having to figure out how do I pitch this to folks, right? I'm on the political side of this endeavor. And I meet people from all walks of life who say, well, you know, air conditioning repair people make a lot of money. And I'm here to tell you that I've never met a kid who wants to repair air conditioners, right? Mm-hmm. But I have met young people who want to create economic wealth for their families and feel an immense amount of responsibility to do that. And we actually have the data now that shows here in San Jose, if we were to increase the college attainment rate by 1%, which is 12,000 youngsters in a city of a million people, we would have a net gain of $1.4 billion every year to the local economy. So for the person who says, well, why don't they just fix air conditioners, I want to say, you know what, let's get them into a professional job with a college degree so they can start adding value to every neighborhood in San Jose, not just the ones in Saratoga and Los Gatos and surrounding the more affluent areas here.
And let's go to, well, one of those areas. Stephen from Palo Alto joins us. Hi, Stephen. Stephen, are you with us? No? Okay. Yeah, you are with us.
Yeah,
I can hear you. Speak up, please.
Yeah, sorry. Wonderful program today. I would just like to say to your students who are in the audience and who are listening on the airwaves to persevere. I was one of those students that high school was easy for me, but I never really had any guidance and anyone behind me saying, you know, get a college degree, go into a profession that you really love and enjoy and you want to make a difference. I just like to say to students, persevere, move forward with what your ideas and your heart, desire, passion, and commit to it. And I wish I had done that in the past, but, you know, I've also had a really wonderful career in the culinary, and it's done so much for me. I've lived in 5 different countries, but I do know that there are some things that I was lacking, after high school. I did do some college, but I didn't finish. Like I said, stick with it. Don't drop out. Move forward and persevere. That's it.
Well said. Thank you for that, Stephen. Good to hear from you. And I don't want to sound like a naysayer here, but Jeff Davis, there is a kind of an elephant in the room.
Yeah.
And we're both English professors, so maybe we ought to talk about this. And that is when students go into liberal arts nowadays, any liberal arts, get a baccalaureate, there's no guarantee that there's going to be a job for them. It's different if they're in business, it's different if they're in technology, or if they're in other fields like that. But certainly in the liberal arts, in many cases, they'll be more likely to get a job. In fact, it's a union card for many jobs just to have a college degree. But
right.
The jobs now are harder to come by.
Right. And one of the interesting things about first-generation students as opposed to low-income students is low-income students, when they, generally speaking, when they enter a four-year institution, they are focused like a laser beam on the job market. What is this education going to do for me, and how am I going to get a better-paying job? First-generation students, on the other hand, are what I like to say more present-oriented. They are more figuring out the landscape. They're actually more open to liberal arts degrees and degrees that are not necessarily so correlated with a high-paying job. So they can take longer to graduate.
They generally
for that
do,
reason,
don't they?
Yes, definitely take longer to graduate. There is an issue with regard to the job market for sure. I would like to follow up a little bit on something Jennifer was saying previously or getting into in our audience member also mentioned, and that is what And I think we can all feel the caring and the work that the folks here go into preparing these students. And I'm detecting a little bit of anxiety about what's going to happen to these kids once they get to the four-year institution. And unfortunately, the preparation and the instruction that would directly help first-generation students and first-generation student concerns is really not there. This is the case for a lot of reasons. Perhaps the most important reason has been that many post-secondary educators and counselors have regarded first-generation status as not that much of a big deal. You get these students here. You show them where the counseling center is. You show them where the tutorial room is. And then they're kind of like any other student. But this is not the case.
Well, you've got in your book, you've got 14 narratives of students. And I'm just wondering, there is a kind of core experience regardless of economic background. Maybe you can offer some wisdom here because these students are going to be following in the footsteps of many of those you write about.
Right. And, yeah, What I regard as the core experience of the first generation student are several. One is, and we've talked about many of them already, is that there's a lack of sophistication about the K through 12 system that carries over into the post secondary system. And so choices such as major choice, different academic program choices can be affected by that lack of sophistication. That is one characteristic. There's a kind of a deep, and we've also mentioned this, a deep-seated psychological place in the education landscape that figures first generation students as outsiders. They have kind of sometimes can have this outsider mentality that can continue on into a kind of apathy, or they can appear apathetic, and sometimes it can be actual apathy, and then that can stretch on into long time to degree and those kinds of situations. I mentioned before the complicated identity development process of becoming a college student and thinking about yourself as a college student. And the problem that first-generation students have with crystallizing a college student identity is they have to straddle two cultures. They generally have a family culture that, again, does not have a history of college attendance, and now they are trying to develop a college student identity, which is completely different from their experience. And so they're often stuck between these two places, which can cause psychological distress.
You kind of look in the mirror and say to yourself, I am a college student. You know, go
right
through that like an exercise or
right.
Michael, can I add a comment, though, related to that?
Jennifer.
Is that I don't want them to just look in the mirror and say, I'm a college student. I want them to look at their brother and their neighbor and their uncle and say, we are college students. We are college bound. And so the work that Sharif is talking about doing and that we're doing in terms of building cohorts at specific universities, and I'll be really direct, we do not direct our kids to San Jose State University.
Because?
Right? Because they have very, very abysmal resources for supporting first-generation college students. Cal State Monterey Bay, phenomenal, right? So we'll direct kids there. We have a wonderful partnership with UC Santa Cruz, right, in terms of them providing those resources. So we've taken a lot of strides to understand what are the universities that are going to best serve our kids. But I want our youngsters looking at people in their neighborhoods and people in their communities and saying, we're college bound. I saw my brother do it. I'm seeing my uncle do it. I'm watching my sister do it.
Are you listening, San Jose State? Sharifa Wilson, what about those students who are feeling the opposite pressure at home? You need to go to work. We need to put food on the table. You know, the economic the seriousness of economic circumstances is so much that the students are feeling from the parents' pressure not to go to college.
Well, we at College Track, we work with the parents as well as the students, and we also provide financial resources for them as they're making their way through our program. We assist the parents with all the financial aid applications, all of that. And we try to instill in them the value of waiting for that reward to come at the end of the line. I want to add into this whole creating the college-going culture in the community, because that's one of the things that we're really focused on at College Track. We're working with other partner agencies in the community that also are working to get students to college. And I was just sharing a few minutes ago that this year there will be 80 students leaving East Palo Alto and going off to colleges. And so, yeah. And so what we're doing is that not only do we want our College Track students to support one another, but we want them all to support one another. So we're hosting a networking event so that the kids will know there's 10 of us going to UC Davis. There's 15 of us going to UC Santa Cruz. And so, again, building that supportive cohort to help them with the support that a lot of the schools can't provide for them.
Jeremy, you have someone in the audience, one of the students, I believe, who wants to say something or ask something. Hi.
Hello. My name is Sandra Cruz, and I'm currently a senior here in DCP. And I just want to comment on what going to college means for me, and not only for me, but for my parents, for my community, and just for my whole family. I came here about 12 years ago. I was born in Mexico. So I commute every day here to DCP about an hour out from Gilroy. And so going to college is, I mean, everything for me and for my family and, like I said, for my community and just my parents. And that's the path I need to follow in order for my brothers. I have a 10-year-old little sister. And so I sit with her maybe once a week or so once and tell her how college is important. And, you know, that's what we need to do to hear so our voices can be heard and just to make a difference in the world, in our community, in our families, and to be the good role model, to be looked so that other people can look at you and be like, if she did it, I can do it. And, you know, just to lead, to set that path so everybody can, or what the minorities can look up to you and follow you, and yeah, that's it.
Thank you. Thank you so much. We want to go to one of our callers here. Janice, join us. Hi.
Hello. Are you talking to me? Janice?
You're Janice. You're talking to us, yeah.
Oh, yes. All right. I am calling about my high school niece in Texas who's a junior. She's a smart girl, but she's very angry. She's part Hispanic, and she's daughter of a semi-functioning alcoholic single mother, so she has some problems, obviously. Last year, when she was a sophomore, the Child Protective Services moved her out to live with me, and she stayed with me during the spring semester of her sophomore year, during which time she was put into remedial classes. Even though she was making good grades in her small Texas school, she was not considered up to grade level here in California. Her mother went through rehabilitation, alcoholic rehab, and was able to get her daughter back. And the daughter opted to return to Texas to a small school with few resources and to what I see as a negative influence from friends. I'm sorry that she made that decision, but she did. However, she and her mother want her to go to college, but they don't know how to do it. Problems with applying and paying for it. And I have two questions for you and your guests. Number one, are there any recommended similar resources in Texas that I could refer my niece to and my sister? And number two, is there anything I can do personally to help her long distance?
Jennifer Andalus.
One resource, and I'm not sure where you're at in Texas. It is a big state. But yes, College Prep is a model that is similar to DCP. They're serving thousands of kids, mostly in the Houston area, and I would get in touch with them on their website, and they can get you some resources that you should have.
Any other advice for the caller that anybody wants to step up here? Jeff Davis? Yeah.
The obvious thing is encouragement and doing a lot of the motivational work that this institution does. Because having the opportunity and having it as a goal to get a four-year degree is a lot of what first-generation student families can do. Maybe the last thing I'd like to say, Michael, is this is not a small group of students we're talking about here. Unfortunately, we don't count first-generation students, but the estimates run as many as 50% of the students in our American post-secondary system are first-generation students. So it is really time for post-secondary institutions to start directing programs toward the kind of barriers and difficulties that first-generation students have.
And let me go back to Jeremy. You have someone in the audience, or Alex, you have someone in the audience. I'm sorry.
Yes, yeah. Thanks, Michael. I appreciate this opportunity. I'm a volunteer here at DCP, and I actually want to take this opportunity to highlight the aspect of volunteer, and it's really a call to action to my peer group. I'm the last of the baby boomers. I'm not retiring, but I am transitioning in my career, and there are so many opportunities for people to volunteer, to get involved at charter schools like DCP, at your local high school, at organizations like Sharifa Sponsors. To get involved, and this is a call, again, call to action to those people out there who are first-generation college graduates like myself. I actually dropped out my second year of college, but then I went back, and I ended up getting a double E degree and an MBA. So it can be done. I want people like myself to get more involved, to support the school systems. But it also requires support from the government and from the educational system.
Well said. Let me thank you for that. We'll let that stand. In fact, we've come pretty much to the end of this hour, and I want to thank, well, the hospitality first of those who served us so well here this morning, Jennifer Andalus and Michael D'Souza, and you, the students. Thank you for being here and part of this audience. Our guests again this hour have been Jennifer Andalus, the co-founder and executive director of Downtown College Prep, Armando Cervantes, who is a member of the class of 2004, Jeff Davis. Again, his book is The First Generation Student Experience, and Sharifa Wilson, site director for College Track in East Palo Alto, who is a first generation student herself. We are here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, and an hour is repeated 10 to 11 in the evening. Want to extend thanks to our senior editor, Dan Zoll, and to our producers, Kevin Guillory, Judy Campbell, and Tina Lauerberg. Our engineers here, Danny Bringer and Jane Heaven, and over in our KQED studio, Howard Gelman. Thanks to all of you for making this remote broadcast not only possible but pleasurable and, I think, quite enlightening. We thank you again for being with us. I'm Michael Krasny.
Support for this hour of Forum is provided in part by the Walter S. Johnson Foundation. Additional funding for the production of Forum is provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Claude and Louise Rosenberg Jr. Family Foundation.